Hi everyone, welcome back and thanks for joining us for another 30-ish minute long Suffolk Babies podcast, where we share with you thoughts and insights on common parenting themes we so often have come up for discussion. Today we're going to be talking all about step-parenting, and we are lucky that Jo has agreed to share her own knowledge and real-life understanding of this often tricky area to navigate. So Jo, you and your partner James, hello James.
Hi.
You've very kindly agreed to talk to us about your personal experiences of step-parenting, an honest and insightful account from you both of how you deal with and adapt to becoming a blended family, the lovely blended family that you are. And obviously, I hugely anticipate that it comes with its challenges, but I also suspect it comes with a great many positives for every single one of you. So Jo, let's just go into the dynamics. You have three children, two boys who are 9 and 17.
I do. So yeah, so I have a 17-year-old and 14-year-old daughter as well.
Yeah. And who you both live with and who James lives with you as well. And James, you have one 10-year-old son, don't you, who lives with his mum?
Yes, Isaac's 10, lives with his mum and stays with us for school holidays.
Yeah, so regularly joins you in your family unit. James, question, do you think the difference in the number of children and genders of your and Joe's children have had an impact on the integration of your two families?
Absolutely. When Isaac comes down to Suffolk and stays within our nuclear family, blended nuclear family, it's been a challenge when he's never had any siblings in his prior life. He's an only child, and all of a sudden he's introduced to a family unit with two teenagers and a stepbrother who's slightly younger than him. So it did take a while to integrate. Now, I still think that Isaac struggles slightly with the older children because he's not got any experience of that. And it's a case of, do I look up to them? Do I see them as role models? Are they're a bit scary? They're bigger than me. The rules are different for them. Mm-hmm. So Finn and Tilly have different rules on computer time, TV time, going to bed, getting up. And for a 10-year-old, your guidance is pretty much given. Mm. And I think he's very used to having an environment where it's all about him, and all of a sudden he's one of many. Mm. So different genders and different ages has definitely opened his mind, but also challenged him at the same time.
Mm. And what about for you as the step parent? How much of a challenge a positive thing has it been for you as a parent to then have to be kind of that figure for these other older children and slightly younger?
Well, I love being a dad. I think it's brilliant. I loved it when I was just a dad to Isaac. And then when I met Jo, one of the main things that made me want to be in a relationship with Jo was her abilities as a parent and the way she approached parenting. So when I first met her children, it was no surprise to me that they were polite, kind, inquisitive, intelligent, and understood that this was a challenge for both sides. I think they understood that. Joe had obviously spoken to them anyway, individually, and I'd done a little bit of reading on how to be a step-parent. And the most important thing to me when I came in was to A, be prepared to face a difficult situation, and B, to not be a dad, because I'm not a dad. I'm an adult figure in a co-parenting situation. Mm. And we very slowly introduced the concept of me making decisions or being involved in their lives, and that progressed further and further over the last 2-3 years. To the point where I believe that the relationship that we have now as a nuclear blended family is one of sustainable confidence within each other's capabilities. We know where the boundaries are. Joe and I's insightfulness into life and parenting is very similar. So there's very infrequent situations where we wouldn't agree. Mm-hmm. And the children know the boundaries, and that's the key thing. Once you know the boundaries and they exist, then everybody can coexist with some consistency.
Mm.
I think we're quite lucky as well, though, in the fact that in a lot of ways, because the older two are teenagers, we can discuss things or any issues that come up with them in a committee-like fashion. So it's maybe not quite the same as people who are step-parents of, say, like a 3 or 4 year old, where they have to, you know, sort of go at it in a slightly different way. We have those challenges more with the younger ones, don't we, where we have to have that discussion before we implement something with them. But in terms of the teenagers building a relationship with you when it comes to the boundaries, we can do that in a committee sort of style rather than using oppressive discipline, if you like.
Joe, you talked about, James talked about introducing the new partner into the dynamic of the existing family unit. And talked about having to do that slowly. And I think that's probably something that is worth just exploring a little bit more, because I think when you get together with a new partner and it is working and the relationship is blossoming, etc., it probably can be quite tempting to go all guns blazing from an adult point of view, can't it? But when you've got children to consider, you have to think more about the implications on the children. And maybe, yes, you do have to kind of introduce slowly and slow it down a little bit more in that respect. What's your view?
It does depend very much, I think, on the ages of your children as well. So again, because, you know, with teenagers, my teenagers were very aware of the beginning of the relationship, I think, with James, and met him relatively early on that front, because I didn't want them to feel, I wanted them to feel very secure and to understand what was going on. But it's, you know, that level of kind of communication and openness is really important in terms of my relationship with them. But with my youngest child, it's definitely a case of waiting until I felt that their relationship was, you know, sort of steady and reliable and one that was going to move forwards and was right for everybody concerned. Because, different children in that sort of middle phase between sort of like 6 and 12 are very kind of trying to form their ideas about how that wider social world works, and so they're quite rigid in their the way that they put things in boxes. You know, it's kind of, they like to have everything kind of in its place, and they like that security and stability. So I felt it was, you know, it does depend. And it's the same with much younger children as well, isn't it? You know, they like to know exactly what is what. So until you know that that relationship is stable and definitely one that you are looking to make a permanent part of your life moving forwards, I think it's worth holding on.
So we've spoken about the fact that James, your son, isn't with you all the time and lives some distance away. So I suspect when you do know that he's coming to be part of the family unit with you, you have to plan things very carefully and then ensure that the time you do all have as one family is both made special, but also kept normal and not made into a huge event, and make sure that you can still stick to the, like you said, to the boundaries and the normality of daily life. How do you get that balance?
It's a challenge, and it's not made easy by the fact that even going to collect Isaac is a 6-hour drive, 3 hours each way. So it becomes an event anyway. Everybody knows it's happening. I have to make time in my schedule to do the drive. We prepare food for the journey. So it's all, you know, it's a family thing. It's an event going to get Isaac. And then when Isaac gets here, Joe takes the lead on the parenting in the house. As the most experienced parent and the best parent, Joe's challenge of the first few days and mine is to not respond to Isaac pushing the boundaries. Because in this situation, we have a settled 3/4 of the blended nuclear family, and Isaac is part of that blended nuclear family, absolutely 100%. But even when he's not here, he doesn't receive the same continual guidance and boundaries. So when he comes in, it's very much as a radical element inside a stable compound, and it does create reactions, and he will try and push those boundaries over the first few days, because his experience is, I've lost control over my immediate surroundings, which I have at home, into a situation where I have to monitor and watch my control levels because I'm now one of many. And that's the challenge of step-parenting, is that you have 4 people in the relationship. So you have yourself and your partner and both of your previous partners. we have Joe and Joe's ex-partner who has his way of parenting, and we have my and my ex-partner who has her way of parenting. And the challenge specifically for us is that when Isaac comes down to stay with us for the school holidays, is that the boundaries and guide and ways in which he lives in his the home with his mum is different to the way in which we manage family, our family in our home here. And the challenge then becomes, how do you create equal opportunities, chances and parenting structures for four children when three are parented one way and one's parented another? And the introduction period over a few days can be very, very tough.
I think it's also, there is always this acclimatization period. And I think for any child that has gone through either a divorce or a parental parents breaking up, they do have a lot of anger, and they do have a lot of things that they are dealing with. And it's very difficult for, because as you know, to stand in the shoes of that child is really important, because I think that when you know, a lot of adults can't have those conversations with a child that's experiencing, you know, upset and emotional trauma and feels angry as a result of it. And so they do have all this anger sitting there, and are, you know what it's like as a mother, when you see your child upset because of something, you try and solve the problem by making them feel good. So it's really common for and I definitely experienced this with my children, is you want to make them feel better, you want to resolve the upset that's been caused by that breakup. So the easiest way to do that is through treats and surprises and overindulging your child. But you can't do that for the rest of their lives if you just happen to have, you know, got. So it then does become very difficult to get any form of normality back as a single parent. And sometimes I think that's not always pulled all the way back in. I think, and I was, you know, when I separated, and I had lots of advice on it, and I was really careful to try and not overindulge my children too much. And I think that, you know, that's definitely one thing. And I think that's the kind of way a lot of parents instantly try and solve the issue. So if you then come to a house where you're not always completely given that kind of treatment, and there are certain expectations on behaviour, it then becomes very difficult. And you feel, you know, for that child, they're feeling very angry anyway, because the new step parent is probably the focus of all that anger as well, and the person that they see as responsible for their parents not getting back together, which is every child's desire. And a step parent finalizes that and means that it's definitely not happening. So you are the focal point of a lot of negative feelings, and you're potentially the one who is refusing to maintain this sense of being overindulged to make you feel better. So you can see why. I can completely get why that it's a really difficult transition to make. And a friend of mine who's been a stepmother for an awful lot longer than I have said that you've just got to accept you will be the bad guy. You know, you will always be the bad guy in this scenario. And it doesn't mean that you don't care or you're doing anything wrong, but you've got to be the bad guy, and you just have to maintain fairness and equality and standards. And I think that is the thing that we try and do, isn't it?
And do you address that anger, Joe? Do you talk about it with that the child, or do you just know that it's part of the process and at some point it will dissolve?
We talk about it, because I think it's exactly the same as when you see a toddler feeling furious on the floor. You know, it's a complete and utter, it's a huge feeling. It's not necessarily anger as we'd think of anger. It's a massive, overwhelming feeling that they don't know how to deal with. And so actually the only way you can help get some strategies in place to help them cope with those big feelings is by talking it through. Because it's also about whether or not the biological parent on the other side is having open, honest conversations with that child, or they're dealing with their own trauma as a result of the relationship. I think that's the other thing that's really important, because we don't have any control over what our exes are saying or the way that they're portraying. And very few adults do have open, honest conversations with children. I think that is the thing that it comes down to.
And I guess in an ideal world, you know, just as when you're in a new relationship or when you're with your partner, you talk about how you want to parent together. In an ideal world, when you split up with your ex, you would have a conversation with your ex about how you want to co-parent.
Absolutely. I do think that is really important. And definitely for, you know, my youngest child, we have been relatively successful doing that. You know, as co-parents, and we separated. So there are big things that we don't agree on. Otherwise, you know, we separate, our relationship didn't work. And we separated as a result of the big things that we didn't agree on. But we are doing a pretty good job at co-parenting. And the principal things we do manage to you know, discuss amicably, and we can present a united front.
That's one of the biggest challenges. If the breakup has caused a communication rift between the two people, then if the new relationship is based on mutual values of family and guidance and upbringing, and the old relationship is separated by differences and understanding of those very things, then not only will you be unable or challenged in co-parenting on a level, but there may even be instances of people being almost deliberately trying to create challenges.
Yeah, and disruption. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big, one of the hardest things, isn't it, really, as a step-parent. We are absolutely reliant on the messages that are conveyed by the exes in regards to, you know, the new partner as well, which can be very, you know, very challenging.
And also have to account for the personality types of the exes, because clearly when you then become a blended family and become a step parent, there will always, I suspect, unless you're a hugely confident person, you know, who really has a strong belief in their own thinking and their own being, then a step parent actually parenting your child can lead to all senses of insecurities and anxieties and worries.
Definitely. I think it the whole situation makes you really, really kind of, it's like a magnifying glass on all the individuals involved, isn't it? It's like, and you're completely right, man, unless you are just uber confident and you have no self-doubt whatsoever, just the entire situation is going to make you question so many things about yourself. And that is really, you have to really have a huge amount of security, I think, as a step-parent or as an ex, or all of these different things. So it is really, really difficult. I know I gain a huge amount of confidence in the way that I step-parent, because I, you know, it's my subject, if you like. Being a parent is what I have dedicated my life and all of the research that I've done over the last, what, you know, coming up to 20 years has been focused on parenting, the psychology of parenting and how it works. And so I have wobbles where I'm standing there going, am I doing the right thing? I don't know. And the way that I then go back and make those decisions is that I'm like, I've kind of actually, I can at least go back to the academics on this and look at thing, and I can make a really clinical informed choice over it, over what my options might be, over what other people have done on this before me. And so at least I've got that documentary evidence, if you like, to back up my confidence. But I do, it absolutely wobbles me a lot of the time, thinking, you know, it really makes you self-examine and think, am I having an emotional reaction to this situation? Am I doing this wrong? Am I doing something that's in the best interest of this child? You know, how do you make those decisions? And you have to take your own feelings out of the situation as well. But I do also think that you have to try and build those relationships with the people who are looking after your children when you're not present. You know, you have to. And I think that's something as well that I've really, really tried to do, because I think it's also about how emotional that ex feels about somebody else looking after their child. So I do try and stand in particularly your ex's shoes, because she has a very intense relationship with a single child, and to then see another woman who no doubt she has some negative feelings towards come in and look after her child that, you know, she has nurtured from birth, must be so hard. I get that it must be so, so hard, because the parent who's not present does need that security as well, to know that their child is safe and cared for and respected and treated as one of your own.
Mm. But James Jo is in a great position because she has got all of that background knowledge and evidence base to know that the sort of the things that she's done, both for her own children, but the things that have worked on a generic level from across all these parenting studies, is the right thing to do. And it's very difficult for anyone who doesn't have that background, like you said, to then have that mental focus to think, I'm going to trust my gut instinct that this is the right way to go because it's backed up by X, Y, and Z. But do you think then, having also then gone through this process, that even if you weren't with someone as knowledgeable as Jo, that actually if you are going to become a step parent, or if you are going to have to deal with your ex and a new partner essentially parenting your child, that there is a certain responsibility on you as an adult to maybe do that reading, to maybe try and educate yourself a bit more on how to become a better parent or step parent, or how to deal with your ex being with another partner? Do you think there is a sense of responsibility on us as the adults in order for us to help our children navigate that situation?
There is, absolutely, 100%. But that's what's missing in life, is that desire to educate oneself in an area that may not provide an immediate financial or career-based return. So a lot of people leaving a relationship, experiencing singledom for the first time, it's about freedom, it's about expression of self, it's about finding yourself and being the person you're supposed to be, and then having to spend that time learning how to interact with another human being that you don't want to interact with on a co-parenting level, it's not exciting, it's not interesting, it's not social media worthy. So a lot of people wouldn't do it. It's about understanding what the impact of what you're doing now is going to have in 10 years' time. So I've always been a forward planner. So I've always thought, what do I need to do now to be in a certain place in 10 years? Whether it be fitness, financial, career, it doesn't matter. It's all about 10 years' time. So I can see the impact that we have now. And for the first time ever, Joe's opened my eyes to that impact on people, a person. So how I interact with Joe's eldest son at 17 is going to help determine who he is as a 27-year-old. And that's an incredibly serious responsibility, because he's entering a very critical phase of his life. Mm. So I don't want to come in and make waves for this young man. I want to come in and facilitate his transition from teenage to man. And that means he doesn't need me to be a dad or a stepfather. He needs me to be a mentor. And that changes the dynamic of being a step-parent completely. Mm. But also, I can very easily see the other end of the scale, where, as we talked about earlier, the way of getting around upset and trauma for children is to treat them and to give them experiences, entertainment, cinema, bowling, continual flashing lights and computer games and all that kind of thing. But if you get stuck in this step-parenting cycle of pleasing to avoid difficulty, you are just delaying that transition into adulthood. And I don't think enough people take that impact seriously or have the strength of will to step back and go, one of the four or three of us needs to stop this cyclic downward behaviour pattern.
Mm. It's the same as everything we talk about at the baby level, Mel. It's like you have this baby who, you know, holds a part of you, your body, and you gradually wean them away from you and give them, increase their independence until they're ready to go out there and be a fully fledged functioning member of society. And it's the same with a child at any point, but with a stepchild, I think they come in, you know, kind of halfway through that process. And it's kind of about thinking, right, okay, so where are we, and what do you need right now to be given all of these tools so that you can go on to becoming an independent person who has all of the skills they need to be successful in the wider world and to be a happy individual in the wider world. And that's what is a challenge, isn't it? Because it's sometimes you have to play catch up in some areas, or sometimes children have had a lot more freedom in other areas that you wouldn't have given to your own child, and that leads to them having unrealistic expectations. So it's about then trying to find a level where all the kids within a household are equal, but also you're able to try and give some of these skills that children need to develop just as a normal part of childhood.
And so do you, Joe, have any tips or insights into how to talk to our children about introducing a new partner into our family, or indeed how to address with your child when or if your ex-partner enters into a new relationship?
I think it's going to depend, it is going to be dependent on the age of your child. And I think that that is that. So children below the age of, you know, primary school age are factual. They take things as they are. There's no further questioning or thoughts. Like, they don't overanalyze like adults do. It is kind of like, you know, it's literally like, oh, the dog died. And they're like, okay. It's that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a case of if you are absolutely sure of your relationship, and you knew that you were going to be together and that you were completely going down that route, I would literally go into it by going, and this is, you know, my boyfriend, and you know, we're going to be spending a lot more time together, job done. If you've got a slightly older child, a child who is kind of over primary level, then, you know, you do need to be a little bit more, they are going to ask more questions. They've got more understanding about how those different relationships are formed. And you need to have, like, and children now around 10 have got very adult understanding of the world as well. Very, very adult, far more than we think they have. You know, it's, my sister is a year six teacher, you know, deputy head. She's amazing with her insight in terms of what, you know, children around the age 9, 10 are really thinking about what they're talking about. And it is incredible. So they have a lot more social understanding than we give them credit for. And so I think that you give them a diluted version, but and still very assertively, but nonetheless, you have to tell the truth. And as long as, if you're talking to them and you're telling them the truth, then you've got, you know, nothing to worry about. If you're happy in your relationship, if you know the relationship is a positive thing for everybody, if you're confident in your new partner, you can absolutely portray it as a really positive thing for everyone involved. I think the biggest thing I'm actually really pleased about is when I did discuss the fact that we were separating with all of the children. We never went into the whys and the wherefores of who's to blame, and it's this person's fault and that person's fault. And I think that has been a big contributing factor to my children being able to have a very positive view of moving forwards with James in our lives and as part of our family. Because they didn't, you know, it's inappropriate to have all of those conversations with a child. You know, it's like the facts of the matter are you're separating for a whole set of complex reasons because a relationship failed. And it's hugely sad, and nobody wants to be in that position. But, and it was none of the children's fault. And it is just one of those things that has, you know, we've made the decision that actually for all of us as a group, this is the best route. It's not ideal, but this is the best route. So they don't need all the specific and that means that you can move your life forward without then all of that baggage. And I just don't understand, why would you want to put that responsibility on a child of knowing too much about why your relationship with their other parent, the other person they love most in the world, you know, it's not appropriate to have intricate conversations with them about why that relationship has ended. Since I've been in the relationship with James, Edward and I have had the conversation about the fact that his dad might well meet somebody as well, but only as a result of me being in a relationship with James. So I didn't preempt the situation at all, no. And I've been completely led by the questions that he has asked me. You know, so it's been a case of, you know, well, maybe Dad will, and I said, well, maybe he will. And that's absolutely right and fair and should, and that's the way it should. And I've tried very, I think it does need to be done in a very positive light. You know, sort of, and but at the same time, knowing that you're but also making sure that your child is aware that they could tell you anything if they had any kind of, you know, because obviously any change in a child's life is potentially hard work, and you also kind of, you know, you want them to feel like they can talk to you about anything. But I think you also have to be able, you have to be fair, because if you're moving on in your own life, your ex has the right to do that as well. And you potentially, and you need to maintain that relationship with your ex, you know, so that your child can see that as a co-parenting team, you can still get on and be able to do things together, because I think they do need to see that, and it gives them so much more security to see that.
Are there boundaries that you have set as individuals about the things that you can and can't talk to your stepchildren about?
There's almost no situation under which I would not be comfortable, Jill, having a conversation with Isaac. because I trust that she would do what was right and be able to step back and stop if it was required and say, thanks for bringing that question to me. You know, it's, wow, I can see it's important, but this is something we should bring your father or mother in on. I've got one fairly amusing one.
I'm just thinking of puberty chat.
So we had it during, we've been lucky enough to be able to have Isaac for longer during lockdown because you can homeschool from anywhere. So we've had several week blocks of having Isaac here, which has been a joy and a challenge in equal measure. And during one of the last stay, Isaac said that he hadn't spoken much about puberty. Now, I'm not very good at this stuff, but Joe is a, you know, an expert antenatal teacher, children, puberty, emotions, everything. Joe's an expert. So, but the puberty one was funny because we bought him a book and he read it. Joe came down from teaching one evening and we had to have the conversation. And you led the conversation, didn't you?
Yeah, but you were in bright red.
I couldn't do it.
And, you know, it's not that moment, you know, 8 o'clock at night where you've just had a whole conversation about medicalized analgesia for birth and you're suddenly then explaining to a 10-year-old child that what an erection is. It's not...
Yeah, it's crazy.
But you're so reliant, it's so difficult because if a child's parents haven't had conversations just about how your body works, you know, from an early age with their kids to then suddenly, and you've missed all of that stuff at school because of the lockdown, then you have got, you know, a lot of children out there who are potentially about to start high school, knowing very little. And that's quite a dangerous situation for them to be in. So Joe from his side, you know, we made sure we had it covered.
Is there anything as we draw to a close that you, either of you, would like to reiterate, to raise, or any top tips that you've got that we can finish on?
I think the biggest thing for me is that there will be anger and it will be directed at you, but that doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong. and it's not personal. And to do not overindulge in the beginning because you will pay the price for it later on. And just be fair and consistent and don't take anything personally.
My advice is aimed at people earlier in the process, in that when you are post-divorce, post-separation, and you are starting to meet new people and you're looking forward to a new relationship and things like that, it has to be a consideration that this person is going to be part of your child's upbringing. And at whatever age that child is, it could be 2, 6, 9, 12, 15, 17. And it's going to be a huge part of that child's life. So it's not about you. You're not choosing just a partner for you. It's a partner to create an immediate family with.
So you all have to, everyone, I guess, has to adapt to some degree to make your family the family unit that it then grows into become with all of you together.
And that in and of itself is a brilliant life lesson for everybody involved. You are now part of a blended nuclear family, and the skills required to adapt and survive within that will help you adapt and survive within later life. It's almost an invaluable lesson.
Thank you ever so much, Joe and James. It's been a really, really informative chat. I've really enjoyed hearing from both of you, and I'm sure everyone else would have done as well. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will look forward to speaking to you all again very, very soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye, Mel.